my favorite part. I tell everybody every week when I get to fling the door open and I get to imagine everybody rushing in. And UTM made it in the doorway first today, followed by some, I see some familiar faces. I see some new faces. It's always a pleasure to see everyone. So we'll let everybody kind of the first wave come rushing in. And while that's happening, I'm going to go ahead and just share a couple of quick, very quick messages because, as I always say, you all did not come here to see me. So I want to get it to the speakers of the hour, so to speak. Let a couple more people in and remind you that you did land, hopefully in your intended spot, which is the USDLA Friday webinar series. We're doing something a little special today. We've restarted something we did some time ago and we kind of stopped and now we're starting again, which is that the first Friday of each month, we're featuring people and exciting news and speakers from our various chapters. And so this is the first time we've done this for a while. And I have the pleasure. We have a brand new chapter. So it's not just the first one that returns, but you're going to have an opportunity to meet, Dr. Alexander Salas, who is the founder, president, CEO, all the things of the Delmarva chapter. So they are our first visit that we're going to make as we travel around the country. This is not all of the chapters, but I didn't want to like reveal all the secrets at once. So we're going to start here in August in Delmarva. Next month, we'll be visiting our friends down in Florida. And luckily, we don't have to deal with the heat, although I'm in New Orleans right now and I have the same heat they do. So I don't, doesn't help me much. But we'll be in Florida. And then in October, we'll head up to Ohio and visit our friends up in Ohio. And then we'll be announcing the other ones as we move along throughout the year. So stay tuned for that first Friday of each month. Also, recordings are available in multiple ways. Many of our recordings are available on USDLA.tv, which is the USDLA YouTube channel. If you didn't know we had one, now you do. Go click on it, subscribe, you know, press the buttons, all that stuff, like, comment, share, all the words. So we do have a number of our previous webinars on the YouTube channel, as well as some interviews with some different thought leaders and people that you know and love or maybe want to meet and love from the distance learning space. So you might want to go check that out. Some of our webinars are behind the member in the member portal. So good opportunity to join us as a member if you're not already a member. If you are, don't forget you have those benefits that we have archives of lots of things right now, hot off the presses. We had our national conference in June, and we have the videos, and some of the speakers gave us some additional handouts and photos and all sorts of stuff. And all of that stuff is in the member portal. So please go check that out. If you want to learn more about membership, you can go to usdla.org and read all about it, or ask me or anybody else, including Alex, anybody on the board. We're happy to direct you to where you need to go. Finally, we have some other dates. This one applies to Alex as well. We have some public policy things coming up. If you didn't realize, in addition to her Delmarva activities, she's also the chair of the public policy committee at USDLA. And on September 25th, that's a Wednesday, unlike our traditional Fridays, on a Wednesday, September 25th, we have Public Policy Day. You're going to be learning more about that. I know she's got a bunch of really amazing speakers coming in on that day. And then mark down January 21 through the 24th of next year that we need to talk about already. Where's the time going? But that'll be Public Policy Week. And again, we'll be giving you more information as the weeks progress on that. Also, a couple of other things to mark your calendar for. The week of November 4th through 8th is the annual National Distance Learning Week. And I think actually Alex has got something to tell you about that's going to happen in that week. So she'll tell you more about that in a second, but USDL will have a whole week of free programming and we hope you'll join us for that. And then finally, I can announce that next year's conference will be June 23rd through the 26th. And that will be back in St. Louis. If you were with us this year, we will be going to a slightly different hotel next year. I think you're going to love it. But it will be the week of June 23rd. So please mark that down so that you can plan to be there with us. And then finally, I have to say a quick thank you to our sponsors. You see on the screen our platinum, gold, and silver sponsors. If you have never heard of one of these, please go check them out. And if you do know them, reach out to your rep and please say hello. let them know how things are going. They love to get feedback from all of their customers. And I loved at the conference, people were going up to the tables and having these amazing conversations about like, well, why doesn't it do this? Or could it do that? Or this other product does that. And it was lovely to hear some of those conversations going on. So definitely check those out. And then I don't want to leave out our bronze sponsors and our exhibitors and friends. Again, they run a whole range of hardware, software, different types of platform services, everything. If it is about distance learning, there's probably somebody in the mix that helps you with that. So with that all taken care of, I have the honor of turning it over to Dr. Alexandra Salas, who is not only my dear friend, but is, as I said, a member of the board at USDLA and the founder of the Delmarva chapter. And so I want to welcome you and also your amazing guests that you brought with you today. It's
So,
all yours in that beautiful scenery. Now I'm just like living the dream.
all right, we're just gonna have to figure out how to do the share because now it's not pulling up what we were looking at before. Of course,
It's live television. You would
yes, it's
that's how it
live.
works.
It's live. All right, hang on just a sec. Looking for my document. In the meantime, because we did this twice. And now it's not happening. So give me just a moment
No
here.
problem. While she's taking care of our technical thing there, in the chat, go ahead. We have a lovely crowd today. How about you introduce yourselves? Tell us where you're joining from, and just say hello. And also keep in mind that the chat is free. It's open throughout the session. And if you have questions, if you go ahead and pop those in there, we'll be watching for those. And I'm sure one of the speakers today would be happy to answer them.
Well, I got it.
There
Awesome.
we
Can you
go.
all see it? All right. So, welcome everyone. I am Alexandra Salas. I am the founder and CEO of Delmarva Digital Learning Association. We are a brand new association, and we're delighted to be a state chapter of the United States Distance Learning Association. Some of you already know I've been involved with the SDLA for many, many years. I started off as an advisory board member working with our dear Val here, who's a wonderful friend and colleague, and worked my way in. I think USDLA is a fantastic organization, fundamental to and integral to the digital learning space. In terms of providing representation and information and resources to all interested, not just higher ed, but all things, all areas, workforce and businesses and a variety of different institutions. Anyway, I have the pleasure and the privilege of being here with you today to not just promote and introduce the association, but also to present our collaboration with Goldie Beacom College. I've been an adjunct of Goldie Beacom College for many years, and I had this opportunity to connect with my colleagues here, who you'll meet momentarily. I'm going to introduce them. So we have Dr. Deanna Merritt. She's the Director of Professional Development Partnerships and Faculty of Marketing and Management and Marketing. And then we also have Russell. Russell, I'm not going to butcher your last name, so I think it's Mikluk. He's the Director of Library Archives at Goldie Beacom College. And I just want to allow them to say a little bit about themselves before we jump in and present the information that we have for you today. Deanna?
Sure, thank you. And I want to say that you've already discovered what a wonderful human being Alex is to work with. And I can say almost every time I meet with her, I discover something else that is rich and wonderful. And it's just such a great treat to have met her and to be able to collaborate with her in this way. And I really am hopeful that it'll continue over the years. And so I've been with Goldie Beacom College for some odd years. And And over that time, we have seen that what is important is to connect real world practice to our students. And so we've got to make that link. And as we see the emergence of AI, this fast-paced world of AI, it's our obligation to make sure that our students and our institution have a better understanding of that. So as a faculty member, that presses in on me. But as the Director of Professional Development and Partnerships, my goal then is to build relationships and create viable partnerships where there is the classic saying of a win-win beneficial relationship that we can forge to bring value both not only to Golden Beacon College, but through the relationship itself. And that's what we've managed to do together with Alex and the Delmarva Distance Learning Association. And we have that announcement that's coming that I won't trample on. So I'm really, really grateful to be here and a part of this webinar. So I appreciate the invitation.
Thanks, Deanna. Russell?
Thanks, Deanna. My name is Rusty Mahalik. I'm the Director of Library and Archives. Thank you, Alex, and thank you, Valerie, for hosting Golden Beacon College. It's a real privilege to talk about the great efforts that Golden Beacon has done in moving forward with AI and distance learning over the last, I've been here for 14 years, so that's how long I've been here. And we've come a long way in the library and supporting faculty. We've always had a mission of supporting faculty in their teaching and learning, so much so as providing them tools rather than resources so that their students can learn tools like RIA Checkpoint and Mergent, so students can have real-world workplace experiences in the classroom rather than just getting to their job and having to learn it there. And we're doing that again now with AI, and we'll begin to talk about that later on. But AI is a great thing. It's been around for a long time, but educating your students as well as our faculty and staff to make sure that they understand how to use it properly and ethically, and is a great privilege. The library can help the students, staff, and faculty with at Golden Beacon College.
Thanks, Rusty. All right. So as we move forward, we want to use this opportunity to not only promote our respective organizations, but really to talk about some of the key issues that we are focusing on. The goal for this collaboration is, again, to build partnerships and build relationships and to make a contribution in this space of digital learning that continues to evolve and is now has reached beyond critical mass since COVID. You know, I know that we don't talk about COVID anymore, if that's a thing of the past, but it did provide us with an opportunity to demonstrate what digital learning can do. And I realize that a lot of institutions are still grappling with whether digital learning is remote learning or remote teaching, and we're still having those conversations, and then enters AI in the mix. So one of the goals of Delmarva Digital Learning Association as a state chapter of the USDLA is to continue to dispel myths about digital learning, continue to provide opportunities for professional development and for discussions that provide action. We want to have action plans. The goal is to not be reactive, but to be proactive and build bridges. And as someone who continues to teach, to also find those opportunities to assist students in understanding the dynamic of the linkage between what they're learning in the classroom and what it might look like when they're working. And as you all know, many of our students are already in the workforce. You know, they've had to return to institutions because they either need to upskill or reskill or finish what they couldn't finish. So our students are no longer the 18 to 24 year olds. They are adults. They are head of households. They are parents. And it's just a very exciting time, I believe, for higher education for us to revision how instruction is delivered and how the content is delivered. So again, back to our collaboration, the goal is to advance digital learning as a viable component of instruction. You know, it's not a separate alternative. It is an opportunity that is used in classrooms as well as it is used virtually for purely asynchronous courses. And one of the goals of advancing digital learning is to have an understanding of what infrastructure really supports it, what types of collaboration really support and are able to advance the growth and the scalability of digital learning. So and on the slide in front of you, you have two questions, what types of collaborations and what are effective organizational structures that support the advancement of digital learning? And those are questions that are really at the core of the work that I do and the work that we do as faculty members, as administrators, as higher ed consultants, as librarians, is thinking about, you know, how do we make this continue to work? How can we ensure that students are successful if they're taking a class that is in a hybrid format, in a synchronous online format, or in an asynchronous format? There's so many different variations. And what I've learned and what I'd like to continue to share through the organization and through ongoing partnerships is that what is needed is a conversation, an ongoing conversation that is deliberate and is mindful and thoughtful and keeps the student at the center. Understanding that the goal of what we do in the classroom has to be to better prepare them so that when they are ready to, or maybe they already are in the workforce, that there is that alignment so that it makes sense, so that they feel that the journey or the path that they are on is one that has, that's guided, that there's direction, that there's opportunity. And so that is, that in a nutshell is one of the focal points of the collaborations that I will be doing. And I'm so delighted that I'm working with Goldie Beacom, who is very focused on business and marketing, and is open to different types of strategic partnerships, to be able to do this kind of work. So the slide that you see here is just a sampling of, it gives you an overview of the ability to answer those questions. What do we need to look at to be able to examine whether institutions are online ready, and not just online ready, but ready to continue to support how online or digital learning will change, because it's going to change, because there's ongoing changes all the time. Prior to COVID, there was changes. During COVID, there were changes. And now we have other elements that are changing. And so we look at the ecosystem. We also look at the governance structure and business processes. Are all these elements in the mix? Are there new elements that we need to add? Because this is a static image. And this image will also change according to what we learn. Again, ongoing conversations with business partners, with other educators, other colleagues within our borders and beyond our borders, because we learn from speaking to one another. And, it's part of the practice. And also looking at the support systems that are in place. And if we have these support systems, do we have to develop new ones? And so part of the labor of love, so to speak, is to be able to connect with the leadership, with the faculty, with the facilitators of instruction and support, and truly find out how are these elements reflected in the institutional strategic plan, in any type of, in the self-study that you would do for accreditation. Because the success of digital learning or the success of online is not about a checklist. It's about the integration and integration of systems and the agility to be able to respond to the necessary changes required by the marketplace, which is really at the core of why we're here today, why I'm here today in the presence of all of you and with my colleagues. This is not work that you can do alone. You can't do it in a vacuum. It's done in community. It's done. It's a relational type of business that we are in. And I'm just delighted to be a part of it. And so the goal of this webinar today is to share various prompts that drive our conversations in the hopes that we can open it up and listen to what you have to say. And you can ask us questions as well. And happy to just keep the conversation going. So with that, I'm going to pass it along to Deanna.
Actually, Alex, there was a question in the chat.
Okay.
So if you want to go back.
Okay. All right.
Yeah, if you need, it was from Judy. She's looking, as you're looking at the checkpoints, what are the ways you watch for those moving targets that need to be added as a checkpoint in the current culture? So that non-static piece of it.
Okay. Well, participating in webinars, in conferences, in committees, you have to be active. You have to be an active participant and not simply be an observer. We must engage as educators ourselves, as lifelong learners that we should be and need to be in higher education. If we're in this work, we need to make the commitment to continuously learn. So this is just a guide. The checkpoints are just a guide based on experience and research, but these can be modified there. And I'm sure the list it can be endless. We can continue to add, we can make modifications and address the necessary, you know, the changes as they happen. So once again, this is from 2024. Maybe next year there'll be new additions or the language will change. It really depends on the industry, but how we know what modifications to make is based on the engagement, working with others, you know, and I borrow this from research that's out there, coopetition. It's very, very important to be able to understand that we need to work with our colleagues across the aisle, across state lines, internationally, ask questions, understand if we're not being successful in what we're doing, but we have a neighboring institution that is doing well. Leadership have affinity groups. Make the best of those relationships. Ask questions. And maybe the idea is, well, maybe we need to partner, you know, because there can be saturation in a marketplace, but there might be ways to work together. And, you know, this can lead me to other conversations about course sharing, program sharing. But again, those are collaborative efforts so that everyone wins, you know, and it sounds a little, you know, pie in the sky, but it really isn't. And it's a way for businesses to continue to be productive and viable and stay current. So that's how I propose to continue to make my contribution by staying on top of what's going on in the industry.
Yes, and when, just to put my two cents in, when we think about strategy and strategic plans, I liken it to answering email. We can spend our day answering email, but at some point we have to actually act on the email, right? And so that's kind of the way strategic plans are. We can spend a lot of time evaluating, in this case, organizational readiness, but we could get stuck doing that. It's important that we do as much of that as possible, but then begin to execute those plans and then be able to keep, as Alex says, keep on top of it so you know when you have to go back and make adjustments, when you have to go back and say the environment is changing and so we need to adjust accordingly. Does that make sense, Alex?
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Okay. Yeah. I mean, even with policies, there were institutions at I would say, at the onset where AI became more prevalent, and institutions were really paying attention that some of their students are using this. So what is going on? You know, we need some guardrails. How do we do that? And there was hesitation. You know, I think that you would find every mix of emotion that you possibly could, from I'm not doing anything, I'm not touching it, or very draconian measures like it's not allowed. We're not, you know, we will not permit the use of AI in amongst our students or our faculty or whatever it might be. And then you'll find some in between. But the reality is that what do we really need to worry about here? And it's the integrity piece, right? And because tools they're going to continue. The education technology, the technology itself, it's not going away. So either you decide to get on the train or the train will continue without you. But it's how you can determine how your usage of it and adapt your policies accordingly. You know, it also has to match the culture of your institution, of your organization. Everyone's going to use it differently, but there are some guidelines, and how do you know what to do unless you're involved in the conversation? So
I'd like to echo Alex says that going to conferences and participating, speaking about what you're doing and involving yourself in the practitioner practical ways that you're doing things and using technology, even if it's like only slightly using AI or slightly using a digital tool, is a really good way for your organization to kind of keep up and have that checkpoint and see in the checking out what other people are doing and making sure that your organization is ready to move forward with different things. Because I think that it's easy to sit in your office and maybe talk to a few people that you talk to throughout the day that you normally talk to. But once you get outside and start talking to other people, you realize that things are moving forward and the students are ready to learn. And you need to provide those tools, those digital tools, to get them ready for the workforce.
Yeah, not only are they ready to learn, I found that they're actually fearful that if they don't learn, they won't be ready for the workforce, which transitions really well into the next slide.
Here we go.
Yeah, so at Golden Beacon College, workforce training and development is what we've done our whole 137 years. We started off as an institution. We're a small school, and we've always been a small school. But at our very inception, it was about preparing students for the workforce. So workforce development is inherent to who we are. And so as AI becomes more and more prevalent, it's, as I said earlier, an obligation to help them be ready. And we are hearing back from them. Am I going to be able to get a job if I don't understand AI? And so these are real concerns of our students. And if we don't deliver practical tools, as Rusty was saying, practical tools, practical experiences that help them connect the dots, then they're going to be very fearful of what's ahead of them. And so some of the prompts that we have here is what are some of the effective practices with AI that institutions are using? Do we know what organizations beyond our educational institutions are utilizing in practical ways? And just like in higher ed, the companies are doing a lot of different things in a lot of different ways. And so we need to understand modalities that organizations are using. We need to understand the speed at which AI is being utilized. And then likewise, there are some organizations that are turning a blind eye to it and saying, not us, not us, not us. And then in the competitive marketplace, they too will be steamrolled over eventually if they don't get on that train. And so then what are the pain points that get in the way of effective integration of AI in workforce training and development? Where should we introduce workforce training and development in the world of AI? Should it just be automatically part of the process from the the onboarding process or even prior to that in the hiring and recruiting processes all the way through that process as an employee comes on and then gets trained within a position and then moves up and gets promoted and is assessed and evaluated in the organization. Wouldn't that be a lovely thing if we could learn how to incorporate IA from the very first from the very first touch point within an organization? So what are the pain points that take place there? And do you find economic and infrastructure support from local and state entities designed to promote the use of AI in education and or workforce training development? So what I have found, I've been working on a number of grants, some large and some small, but they all of them, it seems like, are connected to workforce training and development. How are we reaching out to individuals who most often are left behind, underemployed, minorities, others in the economic realm who just don't seem to be as connected as some others? How can we reach out and bring them along in workforce development? And in what ways can we introduce the power of AI in that education and training? And so we are constantly looking at programming that we can do at Goldie Beacon College that promotes that kind of discussion and those kinds of activities. So I would be curious from our group of people, I was going to say panel, which I consider everybody here literally a part of the panel, to see what you all are doing and how these issues resonate with you. Because I know people in higher ed are not afraid to talk.
Well, while someone thinks about a question, I just wanted to comment on what you said, Deanna. And I think that the continuing to have, to build those relationships with workforce development areas and institutions and organizations is key, because in higher ed, if higher ed institutions decide that AI is not something that they want to do, it's important to understand why, the why behind the resistance, right? Yeah. In order to affect change, we have to have the buy-in of stakeholders. And if stakeholders decide that they're not interested, they don't have an appetite, there has to be an authentic reason as to why. And why should not be because we're not ready yet or because we don't like it. It's really not personal. It's about looking at a future, our future, and understanding that if you don't want to use it, the best way to determine that you're not going to use it or why you're not going to use it is to be involved and be part of the process so that you can have a say in explaining why it's not a good fit for whatever, for your place of business or your institution. But the reality is that it's important to be involved and to develop oneself so that you can speak the same language. It's part of, I see a question here or a comment. Let's see. Changing the structure of our assessments, assignments to cater and not against AI. Sherry, do you want to elaborate on that? You can unmute yourself.
Sure. You know, I think when we first approached this whole idea of AI, we all thought about the integrity issues, you know, that are obvious. But, you know, inviting students to use AI in an assessment, showing their critical thinking skills. But at the same time, there's the websites or the bots or whatever you want to call them, platforms, I don't know what to call them. They all vary in terms of whether or not they acknowledge the resources they're based on. And so I think we are going to start with educating the students about the structure of these tools, how they can help them, and how they can still maintain their own voice. So that's what we're seeking. How can we work together? How can it facilitate the product that the student wants to produce to demonstrate their learning? If that makes sense. I probably talked in a circle, but it goes something like that.
No, that sounds great. Thank you. Yeah, I mean, the question is no longer whether we're going to use it. It's how we're going to use it. And so students have to be educated, but the leadership and the instructors, those in the classroom, those educating, the educators also need to be educated, because the tool continues to change. It continues to develop. And we need to be involved so that we have an understanding of the power of this tool and how accessible it is, which kind of brings me to the next slide.
Oh, if you don't mind, I was going to give a brief case that tied in Deanna's point about understanding the industries that your students are going into. One of my jobs is in the legal field, and it's not surprisingly, AI is kind of a hot topic right now in that area. And actually, they are in many cases not allowing people to use it for many of the reasons of privacy, of the questions about where data is coming from. And in a legal firm, the question of where data is going when you use an AI tool and you're putting a client's proprietary information into a cloud that you have no idea and you have no control over. So it is, and it's a constant conversation that they have to have with younger associates coming in, because I can remember I used to teach technical skills to some of them, and it was a big leap for young associates to understand that they had to save documents in a document management system, and it didn't work like Google, where everything just magically happened on its own. So that there is a lot of discussion in some of those kind of areas, like professional services, about and having a good reason to say no to AI. We can't, for example, at the law firm, we can't use Grammarly. I know it is like the beloved tool of choice for students everywhere. It's not allowed in many corporate settings, because again, you're taking proprietary, you know, information that hackers are really interested in, and you're kind of moving it out of a secured environment into you're not sure where. So I just thought I'd add that to the sort of discussion about why some people reasonably say no to.
Right.
But they still want to understand it. So
that's a very fine point. It really is to understand the differences in industries and the use of technologies across the board. That's a very, very good point.
Yeah. So like, do you click yes and allow the cookies or not? You know, with do you use AI or not? Do you understand where your information is going? You know, the safety precautions that you may need to take by, you know, saying no, and you're not going to use it.
I find that interesting that they're that worried about it when so many of these companies are using Wi-Fi, and by using Wi-Fi, that means there's data is not secured. So I think it's about everything is about education and making people aware of where their things are going. And I think that as the one generation goes and starts beginning to retire, and younger people start taking over, and people who are very much digital natives in different ways, whether that being they only know how to use Google and it just saves the cloud, or using Microsoft 365 and it saves the cloud and not used to putting in a document management system like in law firms, because my wife's a lawyer and I'm very aware of that structure, and it's very cumbersome and takes a lot of time and it's kind of annoying. And there's a lot of education just to get them to do that, because they don't realize it needs to be in a certain place. But I think education comes down to a lot of this, and just making people aware, but also technology is going to come no matter what, and they're going to use it and things are going to develop. And libraries do a lot with licensing and stuff, because unless you're one of the 126 American research libraries, you're not really building, say, an AI product in your library. You're buying stuff. And so you have to be aware of what the license says. and you have to make sure where your data goes. And so that, I think it's important, but we also have to make sure our users are aware of where their data goes and being just careful with what you do. I mean, you're not going to put your tax forms in AI and say, please, you know, summarize this for me, because you don't want all that information to go. But then also you can use it in different ways for ideation and other things that help spur conversation and spur your work to make things a little bit easier, like writing a call for proposal or whatever, and things like that, just innovative ways of using AI in different ways.
Yes. So can I move on to the next slide?
Yeah.
All right. All you.
All right. So I was actually going to talk about these different things, but I had a really fun conversation yesterday with the director of academic services or tutoring and in charge of first year experience and the person in charge of our first year English program about how we're going to use a library to incorporate AI into the first year experience and into all English courses for first year students. And so yesterday we were chatting and we had this very long 2-hour conversation, and we were talking about, like, what are we going to do with this workshop on academic integrity? And so we brainstormed a lot, and it came out with what we wanted to do was actually move away from technology, because we talked about how students come to these workshops with technology, with a computer or not a computer, and how that disadvantages some students and puts an advantage for the other students. So we actually talked about creating bad prompts for students in generative AI. And we decided to create bad prompts for the students and then have them rewrite the prompts so that they were good prompts, but they would do it on a whiteboard or on a piece of paper and then do that, use that kind of technology in a group, small group, and then present that to the group. So that's one way that we're going to teach students how to use generative AI, but that also we are doing in first year experience for the second year in a row, we're doing a common reading program. And the book that we're doing is for the War for Kindness, and which blends really well into a Holocaust exhibit that we're going to have in Equity Beacon College in January. And it talks a lot about how, you know, you have to be kind to each other and empathy and emotional intelligence. And we're going to blend that into all the first year English courses. So we're going to use AI. So we have a new tool that we're thinking of exploring and getting called Sight. And it's a tool that's kind of going back to where is your data going. Sight is a very secure platform, and it's like kind of like it builds off of ChatGPT and allows students to ideate, and has the same interface and assistant into this tool. But then everything that it has is peer-reviewed journals and articles. It's not just scraping the internet and putting information in there. So already in that way, it's more secure. And also the information is not being sold to third-party people. So Sight's one tool, and they're going to use that as their for their narrative essay. And so we're going to create an outline and talk about that with their students. Then we're going to do another assignment using a tool that's not generative AI, but machine learning. So again, teaching our students, whether in the workforce or who are going to the workforce or where they want to be, about the difference of different types of AI. So this is machine learning, and it brings in the humanistic aspect of AI. So in this, it summarizes what we all know, which AI can do really well. It summarizes papers, but what it's really neat is then allows, in Scholar, see this tool allows you to type in and retype the summary if you so choose, because not everything is perfect. So it brings that interesting kind of the human balance to the machine. And what they're going to do is they're going to come write a summary on a chapter for War for Kindness. And then they're going to use that same chapter and put it in Scholar's and write a compare and contrast paper. And the third thing that they're going to do, which is building off of something that they did in first year experience last year, is they're going to use a tool to create images in AI. And so they're going to be given a prompt, and they have to create an image based off of empathy. And last year we did a graphic novel on loneliness, and they had to create a visual image using generative AI. And this year we're going to do on loneliness. And so what's interesting is the library, for the first time, we're going to go in and have a lot of workshops within these sections of English 175, our first year English program, and just basically working with them to teach them how to do good prompts versus bad prompts. Because I find that most people who don't like AI are the people who haven't actually tried it. Well, they tried it for free, and they have these weird experiences, and there's a lot of hallucination, but they haven't tried the actual paid for versions. And so we're going to get them into it so they start feeling comfortable with it, and then they can make a choice of what they want to do with AI or not. But I think a lot of it just comes down to they've heard about it. We've tried it a little bit, but this gives them like a scenario where that actually can build on it and work with their faculty member and work with support services so that they can learn these digital learning tools. And I think that's the most important thing, to provide equity, inclusivity in our academic institutions, is providing equal experiences for these students so that they have a way to make a decision on how they want to use AI in the future. And I'm curious, for the participants who are here, how are you using AI in your institutions?
Does anyone care to jump in?
These are the quietest people today. Goodness.
How are you using AI in your work?
Well, I use it all the time. I've done many of the things you mentioned. Proposals and outlines of things. It's just a wonderful way to kind of have that person. It's like having a friend describe. He's like, you know, it's like having your summer intern. Like, they don't know everything, and you have to teach them what they need to know to help you. But you know, it's very much like it's somebody to kind of bounce the thing off of. And I always think of it, again, coming from sort of the gamification space. One of the things that games and AI have in common, there was a book a number of years ago written by Greg Tapo, who writes for USA. He was the educational editor for USA Today. But he wrote a book, and in the book, he talks about how games, and you could fill in AI in this place, are infinitely stupid and infinitely patient, which is such a lovely phrase, because it is like the AI will sit there with you all day and talk to you. And you can refine it, and you can try again, just like you do in a video game. You can try again. And so I thought that was, it reminded me of that the other day. I was reviewing something from his book, and I was like, oh, this is like, you could just substitute the words there and have the similar experience. But I think it has such a wonderful opportunity in that sense of being infinitely patient, of helping students who do need that extra attention, that we don't have resources necessarily to, you know, have somebody sit there and tutor with them until they get that fine point that they needed. So.
Yeah, it's wonderful when you submit an outline and they say, oh, and you look at it and you say, that's a great idea. You know, it's still you. It's still your outline, but it just gives it a little oomph or something.
Yeah, a little
polish. It's also really gratifying. I'm sure, Rusty, you come across this all the time. When you help someone who's, you know, a little nervous and never used it before, and their eyes get big, like it's Christmas morning, like, oh my gosh, that's amazing. They've caught fire for just a little bit, and then you help them with what the dangers are and what you have to make sure you go back. And it's not perfect, and it's, you know, you don't want it to take on some other person, some other persona, that as you don't want to use it for your resume, for everything, because there's a trend in HR. I teach HR. There's a trend in HR where they're able to see an AI generated resume and cover letter in 2 seconds. because it's a very, it can be very predictable in the way it's putting together your information. And so you want to be careful with those things, but it can be a really fun tool to play with, to accomplish the goals that you have.
Yeah. Nice. We had a faculty member came in very worried about the citations that he had, and the citations were in Turkish and he didn't know how to translate them. And I don't know Arabic. So I don't know why this faculty member came to me to like translate these things. And I don't have an Arabic dictionary, and I know I could go online to do that. But we went to ChatGPT and we plugged in the citations. I said, can you translate these from Arabic to English? And it did. And he said, well, how do you know it's right? And I'm like, well, this topic is like, this screams you. So we're going to have to trust that it's right. And it saved us hours on end, or going to go find an expert outside of the college to go to get something done that we just probably couldn't do, or probably had to pay some consultant to do to translate for him. So there's all sorts of just little things that you can always try and make your life just a little bit easier. It doesn't have to take over what you do, and you don't have to use it all the time, but there's just little things that you can, you know, make things simpler. And I used it with my daughter the other day. I don't know 7th grade math, I guess. So we used it for these math problems, and I was like, I don't know. I haven't been in 7th grade in a long time. So I put it in ChatGPT, I said, can you give another example based off of this textbook example? And it did. And then all of a sudden she was understanding what the math problem was. And so it's really great ways for tutoring too.
Yeah, I would have to agree with you in terms of either when you're helping to tutor someone, or if you want to drill down on a subject matter or confirm information that you've discovered. I believe that AI or ChatGPT, whatever the AI is, can serve as a prompt for further exploration and discussion. Yeah. You know, so and we've gotten some really interesting comments of how others have used AI, you know, and as you know, it can translate, it can create music and can create images. And the better your prompts are, the more substantive your, you know, the output is. So it's fascinating.
I think building off what you said, Alex, I think when people are very afraid of AI and for teaching students how to use AI or putting in their course or using it for assessment or for the workplace, I think they haven't learned how, and or academic, and they're worried about academic integrity. It's more of they haven't, the more you put into AI, the better your output will be. So the better your prompt is. And so that is you. You're putting a lot of that into you. It just might not be in the same format that some people might be used to, but it is still you. And then once you learn how to do good prompts, you can really see aspects of whatever output you were looking for to come out of it.
Yeah, not too long ago, I was sitting in on a conference, and it was focused on faculty and the tools of AI that could be used. And there was a big, big interest in using AI in your online courses, where students would submit papers, and that you could use AI to create a rubric, and thereby using that AI generated rubric to grade a student's response. And they just thought that was the greatest thing because it saved them so much time. And yet at the same time, fearful that students would cheat. I just thought that was, wait a minute, what's good for the goose must be good for the gander, right?
But it's also subjective, right? We can continue having this talk, right? What if AI grades something, but in your own purview, it's not an acceptable grade, or
exactly.
it really is not deserving of an A. more like a B or a B plus. So it's those nuances. Mm-hmm. That's why I find that as a tool and in conversations with, you know, many folks and institutions, it allows us to become more critical, better yes. critical thinkers, better writers. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it even helps us improve at having better communication, yes. Enhancing our communication. Because if you find that, for example, you're writing an email and you have the same format, we become formulaic sometimes in how we think and how we process and how we share information. But if you feel, oh my goodness, I just can't figure out a new way to write this sentence, or, yeah. you know, I want to sound, you know, lighter or happier. I don't want to sound as strict or restrictive. How could I do that? And then it provides you with various alternatives, and then you select the one that suits your own personal style.
I like that example.
Yeah, different voices. So let's see. We have someone says great. David says it's great for creating alt text. Yeah, you know, it helps. It can actually speed things up for one. Training. Judy says, has anyone found generic faculty training resource to teach faculty about AI and then how to use AR, does anyone create their own for their institution? We can share some resources, definitely, Judy.
Yeah. So it looks like we have 5 minutes, so maybe we should unveil the big announcement.
All right. So our last slide. We're very happy to present that the collaboration between Goldie Beacom College and Delmarva Digital Learning. We are so fortunate to have Goldie Beacom and Delaware EBSCoR as co-sponsors of the symposium. It will take place on November 8th, 8 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. at the Goldie Beacom College Event Center. The call for proposals is open. There's early bird registration available, and we will be happy to share the slides. The image is clickable, but I can also post in the chat the link to the additional information. So, Deanna, Rusty, do you want to say anything additional about the event?
We would love to have you on our campus and to treat you to a day of learning and engagement and exchanging of ideas. And certainly, we encourage your proposals. You'll see in the description that Alex has provided that there are a lot of different ways that you can submit a proposal. It doesn't have to be an academic paper, but it can be. Please read through that and see if there's something that appeals to you, and don't hesitate to submit. We want to look at as many as possible and choose those that'll appeal to a wide range of audiences. So it's been really great to be here, and we hope you have enjoyed it and has found it helpful.
Yeah, I echo Deanna. More people who can submit, the better. I think that makes it very engaging conference. And so please submit, even if you have a half-baked idea right now and are developing it over the fall semester, submit it anyway.
Yeah, half-baked ideas are great because you can further develop them. They're lots of fun.
You get them out there. Maybe somebody else has the other half of your baked. I don't know.
Good partnership.
But I just wanted to mention in the chat, someone mentioned that their question was skipped, and I think you touched on it a little bit, but if you want to swing back and add any additional comments about, do any of you teach students how to create and refine their prompts? And if you have any additional things you want to add around that.
We are this semester, we're going to work on creating prompts with students. And as I said before, we're going to work with them by giving them bad prompts. There's a really good article out there by Leo Lowe, who's a librarian from the University of New Mexico. If you don't know his work, I highly suggest reading it. And he gives a very brief article on good prompts versus bad prompts. So we're going to probably have them read that article too. Seeing what they can do. We also have an intern who uses Gen AI a lot in her work. And she was really struggling with good prompts versus bad prompts. And I had her do that. And then we did an exercise with that. And all of a sudden, she understood it really quickly. And so he gives very good examples of good prompts. So I think, and he gives good examples of how to teach it.
And also, the Teaching Professors Institute has, and Faculty Focus has, a wealth of information on AI in the classroom on a wide range of topics.
Skimming through to make sure I didn't miss anybody else. Apologies about that. Once y'all started chatting, you started chatting, and it got overlooked. Okay. I think we covered it. Yeah, Sherry, you said enrolled in the Auburn course. Mm-hmm. Yeah, many of the institutions have them. Some of them are shared publicly, and some of them are more within an institution's various campuses or something like that. All right, that looks like. And thank you. Yes, thank you for putting the link into the chat, Alex, for the event, so people can get to the submission form and get those proposals in there. I will say personally, go submit. It's one of the best things you can do for yourself in so many ways. Whatever your career aspirations are, you'll learn a ton just going through the process of submitting and becoming a speaker at an event such as this one. So that's my just personal nudge to people. Go do it. Yeah, and there'll be calls for proposals coming out about the USDLA conference into not too long either. So you can practice. You'll have lots of practice creating proposals by the end of the year. You can have lots of, hopefully our speakers today all submit proposals for that. If not, yes. I'll just come in.
And also think about signing on for, it's virtual, the Public Policy Day and the Public Policy Week. If you have any ideas for proposals of speakers, please share. You have our contact information. And I just want to say, because it's the top of the hour, that it's been really a wonderful opportunity. And thank you, Val, for letting this happen. We're just excited about moving forward and our collaboration with Goldie Beacom. So this is wonderful. Thank you very much.
Oh, I love it. And thank you all for being here today. I am going to go ahead and stop the recording. I'm not kicking people out. As some of you who have been here before know, if somebody has a question they just didn't want to ask on camera or something like that. But thank you. Thank you, the three of you, all of you, for your time today and sharing your information and introducing us to the Delmarva Digital Learning Association. As I said, this is the first of our series. You kicked it off for us and everything. So it's great to have that. So thank you all. And I always give a thank you to those of you watching it in the future, because we love you too. We understand not everybody could be here live with us today, but I'm sure if you have a question for one of the speakers and you contact them, they would be happy to talk to you in the future. So we'll see you next time.